Hey, this is Will. Welcome back to another episode of the Compass Podcast. Today, it's just Zach and I rocking and rolling by ourselves. We're going to be talking about mining news and other interesting developments in the mining sector itself. No guests today, but happy to have you guys listening along with us.
I hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you do, please consider subscribing and leaving a review on your preferred listening platform. It really helps out the show. The Compass Podcast is presented commercial-free by Compass, the number one Bitcoin mining marketplace. If you want to get started mining Bitcoin, source hard-to-find ASICs, or find competitively priced hosting space, then check Compass out at compassmining.io. And now, on to the show.
Hey, Zach, how you doing?
Doing well. It'll be fun just chopping it up with you and me here. No guests today, so no holds barred, no rules on this episode.
Like, I guess mainly today, there's been a lot of mining news over the last month. Even just coming out of June, obviously the Chinese mining hash rate debacle was like the center of conversation. But looking at like North American markets, looking at public markets, and then even looking at like some of the kind of traditional firms in the space like Bitmain, there's been a slurry of news, and I don't think it's really slowed down, which is interesting for the mining sector itself, because typically there's not always a ton going on, but 2021 has just kind of shown that there is a very live ecosystem and it's only growing right now.
Yeah, 100%. It's like the pace of news in mining typically is like a whole bunch of shit happens all at once and then it's dead for like 4 months. Then a whole bunch of stuff happens all over again. But we've just sort of seen this prolonged growth and shuffle and like fundamental change in the industry that like expectedly has produced a lot of news. It's interesting though, like before we get into some of this stuff, like the hash rate shuffle around the world after sort of the crackdown in China made like a ton of headlines for a month or two. And now like people aren't talking about it as much, but it's still like, I mean, that's like front and center for the entire mining sector. Like it's still like the miners wake up every day and try and find more hosting space or are negotiating ASIC buying deals or relocation deals or hosting agreements. So it might not be making headlines anymore. And I mean, as far as we know, there isn't necessarily any new regulation coming down the pipeline from China. It's still very much like front and center in terms of developments in the mining industry. So yeah, the headlines may have fizzled out a little bit, but it's still pretty big news.
Yeah, context is basically what it's become now. Like all these firms, like if they're raising publicly for funds or if they're like putting new machines on a rack or if they're looking for space or they're just like doing JV deals, it's all comes within the context of all these Chinese miners leaving that area. And I think behind the scenes, that's the most interesting thing, but it's hard to get a peek into what is happening behind the curtains. But yeah, I think in general, the things I've caught my eye recently have been Argo looking to go public, I think in Q3. They are talking about the SEC. They're already listed on the London Stock Exchange, and now they're looking to list on the NASDAQ, I believe. And so they're going through all the regulatory loopholes there. So that's interesting. Core Scientific looks like they have gone through the infamous SPAC deal. And so that's where you already have a publicly listed company. You merge together as a private and a public company merge together. You get that ticker and you basically take the private company's business line and gut out all the aspects of the public firm and shove it in there. And then you have a public company. And that's one way to kind of list a little bit quicker. And then I don't think you have to go through as many of the SEC regulations and like the disclosures to investors. You do have to go through some. So there should be some interesting data coming out of Core Scientific with that. And then Stronghold as well. I think they just raised some funds and they're looking at going public. So that's three firms. Recently, of course, we also have some other firms in the past year that have looked to go public or have gone public. And so, Zach, I mean, you have covered public mining stocks for quite a while. Seems like this is only a growing area of interest for mining firms to go public right now during like high Bitcoin price, high valuations, and high valuations for their assets, the like S19s and whatnot. But also there's strong pressure or there's strong growth in the investor sector too. We saw like New Jersey, its public pension invested in some of these mining stocks recently, and then California did back in like October of 2020. But what's your take on like this general mining stock industry and where all those public firms are going?
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of activity focused around the NASDAQ. I mean, you had Bitfarms recently list on NASDAQ, and then Core through their merger deal. and now Argo vying for another NASDAQ listing, and obviously a handful of the largest mining companies in the world already actively trading on NASDAQ. It's like not super surprising to see all of this. Like, with the growth in interest and attention paid to the mining industry, investors want access to it, and publicly traded mining companies in North American markets is sort of one of the best ways to do that for like your average investor who might not be going out and buying a dozen ASICs or working for a mining company or something like that. But it also speaks to sort of the shift in focus, the hub of mining from Asia to the West. I mean, we've talked before in previous episodes about the significant advantages of North American capital markets for miners, and a bunch more of these public mining companies looking at listings or enjoying newly listed on the NASDAQ is just sort of part and parcel of that. Argo, though, is always, people don't talk about Argo enough, I think. They've always been super interesting to me. They are one of the few public mining companies, or mining companies in general, public or private, that sort of actively invest in other mining companies, which I think is super cool. Like, they have, I don't know a number offhand. I think they've made two or maybe three. If Peter from Argo is listening to this and that number is totally wrong, I apologize. But I remember sort of two or three offhand. There may be a couple more than that. But they're also one of only two, I believe, Bitcoin mining companies, public mining companies that went out and actively bought Bitcoin at market to put on their balance sheet. Like a bunch of mining companies, obviously, almost all of them, it would be odd if they didn't hold it on their balance sheet. But Argo went out and bought more with cash they had on hand. And that sort of garnered some criticism from people in and outside of the mining community. I thought it was actually like, I thought it was great. Like, if you have cash on hand and you're bullish Bitcoin, like, sure, you can go buy more ASICs and plug them in. And they are obviously doing that. They're expanding. But we're in the middle of a pretty strong uptrend. Like, when did they do it? Yeah, February. Or like, I guess it was late January, maybe, which was like just when things were getting started this year. And they've obviously done super well when they went and bought that. They bought like 170 Bitcoin or something. So good for them. Like, buy ASICs, mine Bitcoin. Also, if you have cash on hand and you're super bullish Bitcoin, go out and buy it. And they did that. So Argo is always a super interesting company to me. I like a lot of the stuff they do. And if they get this NASDAQ listing, I think it'll just, I mean, they'll be even much better off for it. So
yeah, I'm going to bounce it right back to you. So one thing that we kind of track at Mining Memo is all these stocks. And year to date, we've seen most players doing pretty well, especially like something like Bitfarms, which I think is up 78% year to date, Hut 8 up 53% year to date, Marathon up 128% year to date. But that's not the case for everybody. Riot's also in there, 75% up year to date. Bit Digital is down 70% year to date, and so is eBang. And Northern Data is only down 8% year to date. But interesting to see that there's even like red on this chart when we're looking at Bitcoin's price doing so well and looking at how the ASIC market has just been parabolic as well. So like, from your perspective, what's been going on with those stock prices, just the valuations behind them, and investors looking at these stock prices and deciding that the firms are not acting correctly given their abilities? Are they not capitalizing on the market right now? Like, what's the expectations going on that is leading to the decrease in the stock prices?
Yeah, for sure. So Northern Data is an interesting case. We could probably have a whole episode addressed to them. Almost to talk about the others. Like a week or two ago, a lot of this table here, for our listeners who aren't familiar with what we're referencing, at the top of every Mining Memo sent weekly, there's a market overview of all the top publicly traded mining companies and their 24-hour and year-to-date performance. And sort of a week or two ago, a lot of this was red. And we saw over half of these mining companies a year to date in the red. Now with Bitcoin recovering, that's sort of switched a little bit. But you still see, like, as you look at this list, it's not really surprising to see companies like Riot, who knows exactly what they're doing. They have a great board, a great C-suite. Marathon, who's obviously expanding very rapidly, and they seem to know exactly how they want to execute their strategy. You also have companies like Hut 8 and Hive, and obviously Bitfarms up almost 80% year to date, killing it. companies like Canaan and Ebang are in the red still this year, which isn't altogether surprising, I guess, especially for Ebang. And then you have maybe like a little bit of an outlier, BitDigital, a company who is sort of in the process of migrating a ton of its machines from, or who have said they're in the process of migrating a ton of their machines from China to North American facilities. I believe a bunch of their hosting for machines already in the US is done through Compute North. And they've been dogged a bunch this year through some short-selling firms, basically calling them an outright fraud. And their stock price has definitely taken a hit from those sorts of reports and news items coming out. But like when you look at this list, it's not super surprising. Like the companies who you'd expect to do well when Bitcoin does well are doing well. And you have some others like Ebang and BitDigital and Canaan who are like kind of at best stragglers and having a little bit of a hard time there. So with the boost in minor profitability across the board from the huge drops in difficulty and sort of the slow recovery of hash rate, you'd expect like as earnings for a bunch of these companies come out over the next month or so to see like some even more bullish price action from these companies relative to Bitcoin. Usually mining companies are a high beta play, so they'll outperform Bitcoin on the way up and also underperform even more so on the way down. But we might see that effect exacerbated with their profitability that you'd expect from well-functioning mining operations when we get these earnings reports over the next month or two. So nothing too shocking here. It's just the market's turning up a little bit and we see that reflected in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining stocks.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of corollaries you could pull out of this. I'm interested to know if how stock prices are tagged into public announcements of new services, whether it be new machines, new facilities, new infrastructure, or new like software releases, and see if there's like any ties to that right now, just because we are like in a social media market where if there's an announcement, your stock tends to go up. But that's interesting. Good to know about that. Moving over though, there's definitely been some other stuff going off in the market in terms of going public. I think the 10,000 pound elephant or whatever the saying is in the room is Bitmain. And so they are in the final stages of pushing Antminer away from their business, or Antpool, sorry, their pool, which they've controlled for years, obviously, and they used to control BTC.com. They spun that off a while ago, and now they're in the final stages of spinning off this pool. And so they're only going to focus on manufacturing. According to a report from The Block, that the rationale for spinning off the two entities was to be able to streamline going to public markets more easily. If they're just focused on manufacturing alone and all aspects that come into making their Antminers, it's easier to go public. Regulators seem to like it more. And I guess regulators don't seem to like the pool aspect of their business. I think there's a few interesting things about that. I'm interested to know where Bitmain will go public. I think last time they tried to go public on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange and it fell apart for a few reasons and they decided to withdraw their application. I think that was 2018 or 2019 when that happened. Another interesting aspect of this is seeing pool decentralization even further. I'm assuming that Bitmain, if they are self-mining and all that, that they're going to point towards a pool that they have some sort of financial interest in, but maybe they're not now. It depends on like what the connections are between these pools. And will those pools continue to like keep pace with like the Via BTCs and the Poolins of the world and all that, or will they kind of fall apart and like lag behind as Bitmain kind of focuses on manufacturing itself? But interested to hear your thoughts on that, because obviously Bitmain is kind of the big guy in the room, or has been for the last few years.
Yeah, the pool play is interesting to watch. Obviously, Antpool was the dominant pool for a while. And then for a little over a year, maybe a year and a half, actually, now that I say that, it might be just under a year. I can't remember exactly. We wrote about it in a previous mining memo. But F2 Pool basically was the top pool for a while, and Antpool had them squarely in their sights and were sort of gunning for them for a while to overtake them. They did right before sort of this China crackdown happened. And now, like still, Antpool by hash rate is still the largest pool in the world. But them separating from Bitmain like is interesting, because like the relationship there, Bitmain and Antpool, was definitely leveraged to push Antpool back into the number one spot, overtaking F2 Pool and that sort of thing. How it all plays out in terms of listing and the ongoing relationship, if any, between Antpool and Bitmain, I'm not sure, but I would guess that Bitmain definitely would to some extent prioritize like a listing, an IPO or direct listing in some sort of US market. I mean, not even exclusive to crypto and Bitcoin. You see just a lot of chaos in Chinese equity markets right now with all sorts of regulatory changes and different sorts of crackdowns. I mean, investors and markets don't like unpredictability and chaos. And with a bunch of, like we just talked about a minute ago, a bunch of these other mining companies either recently achieving or requesting like vying for NASDAQ listings right now, I don't really see any reason why Bitmain wouldn't join them. And that would be, like, in my mind, almost as, if not even more monumental than sort of Coinbase's IPO, if Bitmain lists on in a US market. So yeah, I mean, I don't really have any concrete predictions to give to that, but definitely curious to see the ongoing relationship. Like, there won't be any formal press release about it, but you can sort of pick up clues between Antpool and Bitmain going forward. And like, whenever that IPO or direct listing comes about, that'll be pretty big for the industry. Because, like, in general, hardware companies, especially public ones, have they just have a much harder time of it than sort of like self-mining public companies, just because of all the capital costs involved. And it's just a very different business, and to some extent a much harder business. Like, public mining companies, self-mining companies, you just sort of buy facilities, plug in computers, and manage your hash rate. Manufacturing public mining companies, public or private, have, like, obviously very, very different business. And that'll be huge if when Bitmain goes public. So
yeah, Bitmain's definitely had an interesting year as well. And so I'm wondering if how much that plays into it with Mikri Zand kind of took over and Jihan Wu was now ousted. That happened in January, of course. And now they're separating here, looking forward to a public listing. So that's an interesting kind of thread here. Another thread is, of course, China's been cracking down not only on Bitcoin mining, but anything to do with capital markets, seemingly. They're just kind of looking for rabbits to swat with a bat. So we've seen, like, education stocks recently, I think it's just only this week, private education stocks have been kind of swatted down. And then there's been a lot of tech stocks as well, like DD, which is basically like an Uber in China, got swatted down. I don't know the details of that, but I know that their stock price decreased a lot because Chinese regulators were coming in. So I'm wondering where they will publicly list. I'm assuming that they'll have to list in Asia just because they're an Asia-based company and the Chinese government is really trying to, like, hem in these firms to stay in Asian capital markets. It's kind of been a play for the last few years. But at the same time, obviously, if they did list in the US, I think they'd have higher valuations. Like, we've seen that through our own report, North American Bitcoin Mining Index. And it's just, it's like common knowledge. If you list on the NASDAQ, then you enjoy higher valuations, which allows you to grow and expand as a firm more aggressively than other firms would be able to do. So yeah, that's definitely something to watch going into the remainder of the year. Hopefully they do go through some sort of IPO process though, where analysts are able to, like, get into the weeds of what Bitmain's firm has looked like over the last few years and what their projections going forward are like. I think that would be some really valuable information, kind of similar to when Coinbase put out its S1 and there was just a mountain of information about how private crypto exchanges work and what their expectations were for a public listing. Two other things kind of caught my eye this week. One was Jasmine Telecom, which is a Thailand-based telecommunications company, announcing that they're planning on buying up to 50,000 Bitcoin miners by 2025, I think it was the date, which would be like 5 exahash for the network, which right now would be like, I don't know what we're at right now, but about, say, 5% of the network. By then, who knows what it's at. But interesting to see them throwing a lot of capital into this. Zach, like, I guess my question for you is, we're seeing more firms and players getting interested in the space right now when we're either one leg up on a Bitcoin bull or we're one leg down going to a bear. If you were in the seat kind of making these decisions, how would you think about investing into Bitcoin mining, like, as a public firm? I think as like a retail market or as someone who's exposed to North American public markets, it can make a little bit more sense to keep procuring ASICs just because you have the capital behind you. But interesting to see some of these other players kind of get into the space that perhaps don't have access to that that capital.
So yeah, I saw this also. I think they have really big plans, and I think it's great. Like, well, it's great and it's like dangerous. Like earlier this year, we've seen so many random companies get into Bitcoin mining, like online gaming, gambling companies, global shipping logistics company. I think a Florida based, somewhere in Florida based health and wellness brand said it wanted to get into Bitcoin mining. I mean, that's great. I love Bitcoin mining. But you can also lose your shirt really fast. Obviously they need to be careful. but looking through some of the plans for this announcement, like this quarter, Q3, they want to install 500 ASICs, it looks like, which is like, that's good. Like not a huge amount really by any means for like a large public, I think they're public company that wants to get into Bitcoin mining. And then in 2022, they want to scale it up to 5,000 machines, eventually 10xing that amount, or I guess 100xing the original installation of 500 to 50,000 machines before the next halving. So, I mean, that's great. Like, it's always good to have big plans, big goals, but they should just be careful. The goal of Bitcoin mining is to like survive. Like with any sort of market that you enter, like mining Bitcoin is just taking a very heavily leveraged long on Bitcoin. So you're a trader essentially with pretty significant hardware and OpEx costs. And some people just don't think about it that way. But I hope these people do. They said at this scale, once they get all 50 grand or 50,000 machines installed, JTS, the company, could mine around 16,000 Bitcoins per year. Now, obviously, that's based on their expected hash rate with all those machines installed compared to like Bitcoin's current hash rate now, which is like a broken comparison. But everyone does that, so we can't fault them too much. They should just be careful. I think we'll see a lot of companies like Jasmine, and I mean not specifically them, but sort of in the same category as them and other non-crypto native companies coming into Bitcoin mining and just going sort of like headfirst in the deep end, ending up in not so great situation in the near term future, because it's a tough market and a lot of miners get squeezed out at certain points based on like difficulty in hash rate or just sort of Bitcoin's price point. They go in too fast, too deep without a great plan for if things go bad. And let's just hope they have a plan for that.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of just crypto exchanges in general, actually. If you don't have a plan and you don't have the capital and the resources to get it done, like you're going to get squashed and you're going to get kicked out. So like FTX is a great example of nobody who just popped in the space and really dominated only after like 2-3 years of kind of figuring its legs out. But there's just countless examples. There's like coffins lining up of just exchanges that tried to make it and totally failed or on their last legs. And I just don't think that's going to change no matter where you're at in the cryptocurrency industry or the Bitcoin industry itself. Like it's a very competitive market. It might look like free money, but it's extremely competitive. And like Zach, you and I have both talked to everyone from techies at facilities all the way up to C-suites at firms like Riot. And they've just acknowledged that there has been a lot of interest moving to the space this year, whether it's a Florida health and wellness company or something like the 500.com moving into the space. And you just really have to be prepared and have a game plan for what you want to do. Otherwise, you will more than likely fail. The miners who have been around forever are kind of scrap dogs. They figured out what works and what doesn't work, and they're very aggressive and they go for it.
You mentioned it earlier, I think, and you hit the nail on the head. Like this space, all aspects of it look like there's just a lot of free money floating around everywhere, and like it's impossible to lose. I mean, you look at like every other industry and the stats of like new startups or new companies have like a 1 in 10 survival rate or like a 90% failure rate. It seems like how often do you hear of a crypto startup actually like failing? Like you never really hear that. And so people sort of jump into the industry, including miners, and think, hey, I can't lose. There's so much capital floating around everywhere. Let's carve out my slice of this. And I mean, especially in mining, I mean, I don't necessarily speak from firsthand experience. I speak from sort of, thankfully so, I speak from sort of the wisdom and insight I've gained from a lot of other miners operating at much larger scale for a lot longer period of time. But like the road to from 2009 to where Bitcoin mining is today is littered with miners who didn't manage their operation well and didn't really know what they were doing. And I think a bunch of these new companies are probably going to join, hopefully not. I mean, hopefully we all succeed and make money and it's great until the next halving when we can revisit all this. But mining isn't like an easy game. And the survival rate for new miners is probably much closer to like the survival rate of new businesses in other markets instead of the survival rate of startups in crypto. There is a ton of free money, but especially in mining, you got to have a great strategy and execute it very well.
Yeah, definitely. Just closing out the conversation here. I was wondering your take on this new ban in a few, I guess, more liberal-oriented states in the United States against purchasing on the consumer level energy-intensive hardware equipment like computers. So this came out, I think, earlier in the week that Dell and its subsidiary Alienware are not shipping to states like California and Colorado certain products they have because they're too energy-intensive to ship to consumers themselves, which to me is just, it's wild to see that. And I'm wondering when that kind of starts moving into other sectors like Bitcoin mining, for example, which is obviously very energy intensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's just another development in the crusade of ESG. And I don't say that like to be, I mean, it just is what it is. There's no like subtext or innuendo there. Like today you see the chair of the SEC like going full ESG in this like Twitter promo video that he sort of opened with, why is the chair of the SEC talking about ESG? It's like, well, that's a great effing question. Like, and it's just because everyone is sort of under the gun from these environmental terrorists who want everything to sort of use as little energy as possible and as, according to whatever definition they subscribe to, as clean of an energy source as possible. And I guess like next up on the list for some of these states were gaming computers. So, I mean, it's inevitable that this will sort of touch every area of anything that uses energy at all. And I mean, not to zoom out too far, but I think it'll just come down to, like very, very state level, legislative, discretion, and some states will just let you live and use normal amounts of energy. Other states will do everything from limit gaming computers to who knows what's next. So yeah, not surprising. It's just, it's mad world out there.
Yeah. I think it speaks to like the next level of state arbitrage we're going to see. Where you're going to live really will determine your status of living, as opposed to in the past. Well, I guess similarly, that's kind of how the US has always worked to a degree, where you've been able to like move between states pretty easily, but each state has the ability to construct its own laws. And now that's really coming to the forefront. I think for a lot of people, especially retail markets, people who don't have access to a ton of capital, they're going to see that some of their options restricted a lot. Like the fact that you can't purchase a consumer laptop that's energy intensive because some state board decided that you can't is just wild to see. And this comes at the same time. The EU has just passed or is looking to pass some laws against carbon output, but they've okayed private jets to continue flying crisscross across Europe. No issues at all. And of course, so this just further polarizes and breaks apart classes, which of course is not something that I'm ever going to advocate for. So yeah, really interesting to see that development, pretty frustrating. And I'm totally with you. I think there's going to be some states that allow you to live the life that you want to live. And we're going to keep seeing markets develop for products that people want. And then you're going to have other states where it's like, nope, you have to have this status of living because that's what we are okay with on a social level. But no, pretty wild. Zach, thanks for jumping on the pod. We're going to close it out here. Of course, yeah. Log on to compassmining.com. Check out our facilities, our hardware. Follow us on Anchor or anywhere else that you listen to podcasts. Check out our previous episode. And of course, subscribe to Mining Memo, where you can get weekly insights into the mining ecosystem into your inbox every Tuesday. Thanks.
See ya.
That's a wrap for us at the Compass Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please subscribe and consider leaving us a 5-star review on your preferred listening platform. Thanks again, everyone. The thoughts and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests on the Compass Podcast are their own and do not represent the opinions of Compass Mining, Inc. None of this content should be considered financial advice.